Jeff, I've had that drone song stuck in my head all day. It's a new Muse song called Drones. And it's about the drones are killing the people. And it's like a very, very...
drones.
That's a Gregorian chant.
Yeah, Gregorian chant kind of song.
Well, it's not like Carly Fiorina's dog song, right?
You're kind of
off?
I turned it off. I haven't heard that one yet.
Oh.
But I have heard of all the Halloween costumes coming out of the election. There's a...
Oh, no.
What is it? Donna Trump?
Donna Trump.
It's like a really sexy Donald Trump costume.
Okay. Oh, dear.
Yeah.
I wouldn't think that would be possible.
It's hairpiece and all. It's quite...
Interesting.
Yeah. Unique.
Well, we're all here, including our guest. Shall we count it down?
Sure. You ready?
Yep.
Okay. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I'm Guy Gasser with HP Philatelics, and you're listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
It's hard to send up. It's hard to send up.
Stamp collecting happens when we dream together.
Welcome to Stamp Show Here Today, episode number 48. I'm sitting here with Scott, Cash, and Jeff, and I'm your host, Jessica. We're also joined today by a special guest, Bert.
Hi, Bert.
Hi, Bert.
Hey, Bert.
Hello, everybody.
You can find us on Facebook at Stamp Show Here Today and on Twitter at Stamp Show HT. Tell your friends they can find us on iTunes, Podbay, and Stitcher. Let's talk about stamps. So this week we'll be talking about stamp news, the papal visit affects the USPS, and our special guest will also be tuning in at the end of stamp news, hashtag stamp stories, hashtag Sescal2015, and our expert topic of the week is Persian rugs and U.S. revenue stamps.
And I hate to interrupt, but...
You always interrupt.
I'm not going to tell people how to live their lives.
But
you should stay tuned for this podcast.
Oh, okay.
So, stamp news. I'm going to read the USPS credo here because it kind of applies. It's neither snow nor rain nor heat nor gloom of night stays these couriers from the swift completion of their appointed rounds, which can be found in New York on the Farley Post Office. But if the Pope's in town, peace out. They literally tweeted this week, a reminder, due to the papal visit, service impact can be expected in New York today. So they can't even get through the thickness of the crowds down there to even kind of deliver mail.
They're not even
Well, then
try.
They're not trying hard enough.
Hey, it doesn't say nor mob of crazy people in that list
well,
anywhere.
Well, don't say crazy.
Well.
Just mob. Mob.
Just
of
a mob.
And, by the way, Herodotus is the first person who said that, right? He was an old Persian guy.
He said what? Crowd of crazy people?
No. Yeah, completion of their appointed rounds, that quote came out of Herodotus.
Oh.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So you can thank an ancient Persian and an architect.
So, as Pope Francis makes his first visit to the United States, the eyes of the media and much of the world are on him. No doubt, Vatican City and perhaps some other postal administrators will be issuing postage stamps to commemorate the visit. Pope Francis made his first stamp appearance about 6 weeks after the College of Cardinals elected Archbishop Jorge Mario... Oh, I'm going to butcher this.
Jorge Mario Bergoglio.
There we go. Thank you, Jeff.
That guy.
For the save. of Argentina. As the 265th...
Where is that? Is that anywhere near Argentina?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think it's next door, right?
That's about the extent of Jessica's Hispanicness.
Oh, okay.
The 266th successor of Peter on March 13,
2013. Not really.
Bergoglio.
Bergoglio, okay.
Took the name of Francis the First.
Which also, just as a note, he is not just the Bishop of Rome...
He is
also the King of the Vatican, along with seven other kings in the world who have absolute rule. So he is there with Qatar, United Arab and UAE, the UAE.
The United Arab
Emirates.
That's
worthy of a remix.
Brunei, Oman, Saudi Arabia, and Swaziland, and the Vatican is a kingdom.
Wow. Oh. That I did not know.
Yep. Well, those are the places where the king has absolute rule.
Right.
Those are not the only kingdoms.
Right.
As opposed to England.
Not a constitutional monarchy. Yeah.
Is Monaco the same thing?
Yeah, constitutional monarchy. These are absolute kings. As a matter of fact, for you to be a resident of the Vatican, the king has to grant you citizenship. And he can revoke your citizenship at any time.
So that's how that works, because I knew that there's only 1,000 citizens dead spot on the nose at any given time.
Oh, no. Well, right now, because we were there was on Stamp Boards, which, by the way, let's give a plug to Stamp Boards, very nice blog site. Stamp Boards, there was a discussion on what's the smallest postal entity to issue stamps. And it's the Vatican. The Vatican right now today has a population of 843 from Wikipedia, because when this discussion was going on. And some people brought up, well, what about the UN administrations? And we pulled up probably the actual smallest is the UN Meteorology Commission, because it only has 143 people. And probably its square footage is only like, you know, a bunch of cubicles somewhere.
That's a nationality?
Well, see, that's the thing is it was actually issued as a Swiss stamp. So they go through the Swiss Postal Service. But it's for the UN Meteorological.
We're all having problems today. That's cute.
Okay, so on May 2nd of that year, his native Argentina, Vatican City in Italy, participated
It's pronounced Italy.
Italia.
Participated in a three-way joint issue honoring the new pontiff. Each postal administration issued 4 stamps featuring photographs of Pope Francis.
And nobody is going to make a joke about a three-way with the Pope.
Editing floor, there you go. Brazil, Ecuador, Ghana, the Philippines, and South Korea are just a few of the worldwide postal administrations that have issued Pope Francis stamps since that time. As for his visit to the United States, many stamps already related to the sites he will see, including the White House, the U.S. Capitol, the UN, New York City, and Philadelphia. Also, Father...
Junipero. Being Junipero. From California, Junipero. Everybody has to know this one.
Yes, Junipero.
Junipero.
Also, Father Junipero.
That was a mispronounced. It's Junipero.
Coming from our resident Native American.
There you go. Also, Father Junipero Sierra, who was...
You're going to have to practice that one and have it dubbed in.
Just say, that California mission guy...
who was canonized by Pope Francis at a Mass September 23 at the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception in Washington, D.C., has been honored on stamps from the United States and Mexico. The USPS issued its 44-cent Junipero Sierra Airmail stamp August 22, 1985.
Who's the guy who was in Sarah?
Michael Cera.
Michael Cera. Michael Cera.
Okay.
Michael Cera is like Junipero Sierra's great-great-grandson. He needs to be canonized now.
There you go. Just ahead of the Pope's U.S. visit, Vatican City issued a stamp September 2nd commemorating the 8th World Meeting of the families in Philadelphia. The Pope's visit was planned in conjunction with that meeting. The Liberty Bell is among the Philadelphia landmarks pictured in the design.
Hold on. Meeting of the families of Philadelphia? You mean just a bunch of families?
Was the meeting of the families.
Yeah, we're meeting the families.
Were they like original...
Those are like the mafia families?
Yeah. You get this
meeting
territory.
Of the families.
You get that territory. And we both give the vic to the vicar.
Oh my gosh.
I think it's some kind of religious organization.
Yeah, 8th World Meeting of Families.
Well, I'm guessing if the Pope showed up, it has some sort of religious connotation.
Probably.
Well, I'm sure it also has to do with the family unit. And
Philadelphia.
Probably.
Well, obviously.
And, of course,
the city of brotherly love.
And indirect,
you'd think that would be San Francisco.
And indirectly.
Oh, I got a lot of editing.
We gotta apologize to all the Homo sapiens out there and hetero sapiens also.
Yep.
So much editing.
Just keep pressing ahead.
Okay. Also, on September 2nd, Vatican City released 4 stamps marking papal visits in 2014 to Albania, France, Strasbourg, South Korea, and Turkey. A souvenir sheet with a single stamp honored his visit to the Holy Land. These stamps are part of a series that the Vatican calls the Apostolic Journeys of Pope Francis. The U.S. visit probably will be remembered on a stamp to be issued in 2016 in that series. Vatican City stamps are available from the Vatican City State Philatelic and Numismatics Office, Gubernatorio, 00120 Vatican City. So what do you guys think about this fascinating journey of the
Pope? I think it's so cool we have a new saint on a stamp.
Oh my gosh.
I think I'm glad I don't live in New York City.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that too.
Sure, even the rats are vying for space.
Probably. And I think it's pronounced numismatic, just to be clear.
By everybody except
Jessica.
Jessica.
Me.
Yeah.
Apparently my English is not so good today.
You started it with Argentina.
Argentina.
Yeah, that threw the whole thing off.
It did.
Lots of big words.
They're probably selling some guy in the stands at one of their football games or something was wearing a complete Pope costume. Did you see that?
No.
Okay, I'll leave it alone then.
To quote Philippians 3:2, beware of dogs.
Yeah, you can take that one out.
That's a lot of silence.
More editing. Okay, and now we have a Stamp Show Here Today exclusive interview with our friend Bert here, a local stamp finder of the super cool, ultra-rare, uninverted Jenny Sheet. He's going to share his experience with us.
How did it happen?
Well, what can I say? I bought a whole bunch of sheets.
How many?
Let's see. Started with 40, and then 80, then 100, and I found one in the last bundle.
Where did you get them from?
And what did you use them for?
I bought them from Fulfillment Center.
Fulfillment Center.
Newman.
And I basically bought them looking for the magic stamp to add to my collection.
Well,
at least that was my plan anyway.
what did you do with all the extra postage?
When did you find it?
I found it September 15th on my birthday.
Happy
birthday.
I want one of those birthday presents.
Yeah.
And the answer to the other question, what am I going to do with all the rest of the one? Well, I'll use about 2 or 3 stamps a month.
That's what I figured.
Yeah. It's like a long life supply.
From now till the end of time.
So did it make it into your collection?
No, my wife had other plans.
How did she find out about it?
The credit card bill.
No, she saw you buy them. But
she saw it buy, and then she saw it sitting on my desk.
Oh, you left the evidence where she could see it.
It had Lynn's stamp news right next to it, with the Y on the cover.
So she sat there and went, wait, there's that? That's next? No.
Didn't take much for her to convince me to sell it.
Okay.
Yeah, wives have a way of doing that.
Yeah, they do. And I'll keep a stamp wife. I see. Which is more important?
I have the feeling if I found one, Jessica would make me sell it.
What are you going to use the money for?
I'd take a picture of you holding it.
Oh, okay.
Part of it I use already to buy more stamps. I bought another 300 already.
Oh, wow.
No luck.
You want to get hit by lightning twice then. Okay.
Well, I want one for my collection, hopefully.
Well, that's the deal, right? You had to sell the first one, but the second one you're going to keep?
That's right.
That was my plan, but I haven't found the first one yet.
So hopefully I'll find one for the end of the year.
Well, that'd be nice.
Yes, if not, I'll probably have to stop buying them. I have too many.
Well, I collect used stamps, so when you find a sheet, go ahead and use one on a letter to me to let me know you found one.
Oh, okay. Well, full sheet?
No, just one.
Just one stamp? Okay.
Yeah, I just want a single.
Okay. No problem.
That's
and,
what
and if you send me an extra one, I'll send you a letter back.
Okay. That's what I wanted to do. That was my plan. If I found one, is I was going to have the sheet on cover canceled at the post office and then sit on it for about 10 years. So I have one of the only real used copies of it in existence.
Which and I was going to bring up in Kaj's corrections, but nobody has still confirmed that one was actually used to Australia.
Allegedly.
Well, after allegedly. CISCAL, the guy will be there to talk to us personally.
Uh-oh.
So, yeah.
More details out of the woodwork.
Well, if he shows us the card, we're going to say this is a confirmed rumor.
There are some single copies of it coming up in next auction.
Yeah, mint.
Right, mint, right.
Yeah,
we're talking used, though.
Right,
used,
yeah.
Right.
I think that, you know, like we said over the phone, if you cut it up into singles, the singles don't look good because of the way that the backing paper is and the perforations overlap. Right.
Well, there's no separations built into the backing paper like there is on a normal
So cutting one out, you're going to have either perfs or backing paper like sort of floating around the edges, and it just doesn't look
right.
Attractive.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are some people with a single that are going to take it off the original backing paper and move it around.
That you could do, yeah.
Or maybe take off the selvage, move it to the center, and trim the backing paper.
Or maybe get four pieces of backing paper, and then just cut them off and put them on non-original pieces of backing paper.
Or move it to a sheet, a regular inverted sheet.
Yeah, get a regular sheet, take all the stamps and all the selvage off, go ahead and put it where it's supposed to be, and then trim it.
Cut it out, yeah.
You could do that. Then it kind of looks like it's on the original backing paper, even though it's original to the issue, just not to that particular
Well, two
stamp.
Of them could be original to the paper. The other four would be not on the original paper.
Yeah, then you let it go for another 50, 60 years, and so he's going to find this sheet where four of them are one way and two are the other. this must be a printing error!
Mm-hmm. So are you going to break up the sheet or selling the entire sheet?
I sold the whole sheet.
Yay!
Yay! Money, money, cha-ching! Yes.
So what number was yours?
Well, I never called. It hadn't been registered yet.
So you're the one buyer, of them.
The buyer gets to register.
Yeah.
So we can say for sure that this one has not been reported in Linz yet.
They have not. So I guess about 27 or maybe 28.
Actually, I think it's probably more like it's in the 30s.
Is it already?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, we've seen a big jump in them recently.
Okay.
Yeah, three of them have crossed through here.
In a week.
In like a week.
It's been pretty rapid fire with those things. I think they figured that they sat on them long enough. And so now they're starting to disperse more of them out.
Or they're sitting there going, you know, 50% of our business or 50% of the issue is out there. We better distribute 50% of them.
Yeah, that's true, too. This has been an ongoing discussion for us quite regularly. What they did
I think since like episode 3 when we first
Something
brought
like
it
that.
Up. Yeah.
Now we'll find out if Lynn's listening to this podcast or not.
There you go.
Well, congratulations, Bert.
Well, thank you.
Congratulations. Hashtag stamp stories. This is going to be about CESCAL 2015. One of the oldest and, in my opinion, the best West Coast stamp shows is upon us and will be this weekend at the time of this airing at the Hilton Los Angeles Airport Hotel on 5711 West Century Boulevard, Los Angeles, California, 90045. This will be the 71st annual Southern California Stamp Show sponsored by the Federated Philatelic Clubs of Southern California. The show opens at 10 a.m. Friday, October 2nd, and continues until October 4. The doors will be open until 6 p.m. Friday and Saturday, and until 4 p.m. on Sunday. Regency Superior is the official auctioneer at this event, and the show will feature 27 dealers, many clubs and exhibits, and on-site grading will also be available. By PSE.
Yay!
There is also going to be big-time stamp expert speaking on Sunday. I forget what the guy's name is, but he's really, really well-known in the stamp industry.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
That guy. Scott. That's
yeah, that one.
So for more information, you can go to www.cescal.org. And what are you guys looking forward to at the show?
Well, I'm looking forward to long days and raccoon lies.
And talking to everybody about, what will you be talking about?
Well, that depends how awake I am. But last year I talked about whatever anybody wanted. A lot of people had questions about expertizing in PSE, and I pretty much introduced myself and then opened the floor to just general questions about expertizing and any expert topic that they wanted to ask about U.S. stamps. And it'll probably be something similar. I might have a small topic to spend 10 minutes on, but other than that, it'll be mostly answering questions. And I think that's what a lot of the people that attend that seminar prefer, because they all come with, they all seem to come with multiple questions. And you know, I talked for 2 hours last time, and I could have talked longer because there were still people there asking questions.
Why don't you keep track of what questions they ask and answer them on the podcast?
Oh, that'd be kind of cool.
Yeah.
We could set up the iPad to record it.
The internet well, there is...
Well, no, terrible. Just to the device. Yeah. I just record it as an audio file.
Okay, yeah, that works. Okay. So please share your pictures with us on Facebook or Twitter at STEM Show Here Today or at STEM Show HT for Twitter. Hashtag SESCAL2015, hashtag Stamp Stories.
And please stop by our booth, at our PSE booth, where Jessica will hopefully be recording.
I think more than hopefully she will be recording.
Interviews.
Yes, yep. I will be armed with the microphone.
Yeah, come say hi to Mom. She'll be there with the device to record you. Hi, Mom. I'm a SESCAL.
Feel free to talk to the dead kitten.
Yep. That's an audio device, not an actual animal.
Yes.
So, no, Kaz. No animals were killed.
Yes. No.
Kaz, I see a pile of post-it notes, so that means you've got a correction for us?
Oh, a couple. First of all, the last podcast was an hour and a half long.
Ow. It wasn't that bad. It was an hour and like 2 minutes.
Okay, anyway, it was good. It was well edited. That's great. Second thing is we were talking about what the largest stamps are. The Moon Rover stamp is the largest U.S. stamp.
Woohoo!
The largest stamp in the world. They didn't make there wasn't a consensus. And I guess just because people didn't measure it. And the first one is kind of a question of what part of it is a stamp. But in 1915, China made an express letter stamp, which was very large, but it was in sections.
Oh, is it that green four-piece stamp?
Right. Yeah. So do you count the whole thing or not? So barring the China stamp, the largest stamp...
But that was an express stamp, not a postage stamp.
Sounds back of bookish to me.
It wasn't a revenue. It was a normal postage.
You sent mail with it.
Yeah, you went send mail with it. But the winner, if it's not the Chinese express letter stamp... is the Bhutan record stamp.
I was just going to guess that.
It's a giant, round, yellow record. It's the high value of the set. And that would be the largest stamp in the world.
I want one on cover.
And the
I know.
Yeah, that would be interesting. And the other thing, too, is do you, when you measure the area, do you count the little hole in the middle?
Uh-oh.
The smallest is the 1856 Mecklenburg stamp. There's four stamps all put together to be the size of like one small stamp. And so 1/4 of that stamp is the smallest in the world.
Is that for like lady covers or something? Or
no.
No, it was for regular postage. It's just at the very beginning of postage stamps and people didn't kind of figure that they had to have something that you didn't need a magnifying glass to read.
That's great.
It was cheaper because it used less paper, and paper was very expensive.
And
Good point.
Unfortunately, you can't play it on a record player.
No. I was very confused by those record stamps when I first saw them. I didn't know what they were. Looking at a dealer had some, and that had me scratching my head for a while till I asked. It's a record. It's a stamp. It's both.
Actually, Steve Petillo at OrcoPax, he has two fantastic exhibits he puts out. One is on hinges.
Oh, yeah.
And one is on how they wrapped the record stamps from Bhutan.
Okay.
And so he has these round tube sort of packaged
Like a roll of quarters?
Like, it's like a roll of quarters. Yeah, they packed them like a roll of quarters, basically. And he has them, and it's two very, very interesting exhibits.
If I remember rightly, you can actually play those, and it's the national anthem or something?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, it's actually, each one has a different recording.
Different recording or something?
Yeah.
Well, this one came from an issue where all of them
cool.
had the national anthem, so.
Interesting. Yeah, weird stamps. Those are the weirdest stamps in the world, too.
That's it.
Okay, so our social media's been blowing up lately. Our friends Peanut McKenzie, Vit, Periscope Girl, Sammy Marrawi, Liberia Philatelic, International Podcast Day, all said, awesome idea for a podcast, cheers to continued success and more iTunes reviews, and that was Dave. So these are all of our Periscope followers.
Did anybody comment on Rax or Sidious?
No, not yet.
We did have a comment by Joseph Whitmore again. P.S. Funny to hear my prediction that the non-inverted Jennies are being used as postage by non-collectors is correct.
Allegedly.
It would be interesting to hear more about how Scott decides to list varieties in the catalog. And he posted a picture of a 1579, which he believes is a double
black imprint. Yeah,
double impression.
That's not listed.
And he says they probably won't ever list it, but we'll see what happens.
If you get a cert, generally speaking, they get listed.
He says right here, it's sitting in my collection. They won't likely see it or hear about that for a very long time. If you don't show it to somebody, it's not going to get listed.
Yeah, guaranteed.
Yeah.
So, and then Chicago Philatelic hit us up again. They said, listening to this podcast is a fun Saturday activity.
We don't want to limit people just to Saturday, though.
Nah.
This is a year-round.
It's non-secular.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, so our expert topic of the week is Persian rugs and U.S. revenue stamps. So this week,
I was thinking when you put this up, when you post it, we are going to get a lot of hits from people going, oh, let me hear about Persian rugs.
Oh, no.
So everybody...
lots of cross confusion.
If you listened this far in and you do not realize that this is a stamp collecting podcast, we're going to continue to make you unhappy.
Yep.
So this week's topic was inspired in part by an article in the most recent issue of the American Philatelist, a great publication from our friends at the APS. The article talked about the first U.S. revenue stamps and the Persian rugs, and included some spectacular one-of-a-kind used examples on cover and document. I know we talked about colonial revenues in episode 41, but now we're going to dive into the history of all revenues. So, well,
not really all revenues.
Well, a few more. Yeah, extra.
So what's like the dictionary definition of revenues? What is a revenue stamp?
It's a stamp that brings in money.
So all stamps are revenue stamps?
I got a dictionary.
Yes, a postage stamp is a revenue stamp. Is it not?
Yes, the revenue stamp brings money into the government. Postage stamps
right.
to the post office.
Okay.
Well, but the post office used to be part of the government, and in
Correct.
Most countries it still is.
So what special need did they fill at the time that regular stamps couldn't handle? Because regular stamps came along well before revenues, correct?
Well, you're
at least for stamps.
You're differentiating between postage stamps
yes.
and other revenue stamps.
So why were they created then?
Anybody?
They used to just press the revenue marks into the paper, right, as a seal?
Embossed.
Yeah. Well, yes. Like we said in the ancient episode way back when in number 41, they impressed it into the paper, and you had to pay a tax when you used the piece of paper. And that, like, got everybody really riled in America. And it was called the Stamp Act. And then later on, we had a revolution where we kicked the king out.
Kicked Sorry, the king. Colonial oppressors.
The colonial oppressors.
So why did they switch then from embossing and seals and stamp use and hand stamp uses to actual paper stamps for revenues?
They actually used embossing right up until 1841 when they issued postage stamps, because postage stamps served a totally different use. They were for prepayment. you didn't prepay a tax. You paid a tax when it was due. You could prepay for your postage with a stamp. And that saved a lot of problems for the post office for uncollected fees for stamps. That's why revenue paper went on, I don't know, until when, late 1890s?
No, our revenue stamp, U.S. revenue stamp, started in the 1860s to pay for the Civil War.
Yeah, but paper went to the 70s, 80s.
Yeah.
1880s, I think. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so in the avenue of revenue stamps, what is a Persian rug? For those that don't know, to clarify those poor people that are listening, thinking we're talking about actual cloth rugs made in Persia.
It's just a very high, it refers to the U.S. stamps of extremely high value, but they're in multicolors. And they're large, like a rug that you would have covering the entire floor of your room, like a large Persian rug would. And they're just colorful, large revenue stamps.
And how big are they? I'm going to guess about 2.5 by 4 inches or something.
They're
like
bigger
that.
Than that.
Yeah, I'm going to say the small rug is a little bit smaller than that, but the large rug is, I don't know, you know.
It's about 6 inches tall by about 2.5 wide.
So if you were a mouse, you literally could use this as a Persian rug.
Yes.
They're pretty big. They're really pretty, too, and they're super, super ornate. Why were they? I think there's an answer to this. Why were they so incredibly ornate?
Well, it has to do with the fact that they had such high face value. I mean, when you're paying $500 tax on something, obviously the value of that is much, much higher. You're only paying a fraction of the value in tax. But you still, when you have to pay $500 in tax, you need something that's kind of representative of that value. It's large, it's ornate, a lot of, you know, it just exudes value when you look at it.
In addition to that, there's a lot of engraving on it, which mm-hmm. makes it harder to counterfeit.
Much harder to counterfeit, especially that size and that amount of engraving.
Oh, hold on. So this is like a nickname.
Yes.
For it. Because I always actually thought that taxes on Persian rugs were $500. And I was like, no, wow, that's a lot for a stinking rug.
No, this is just okay. A nickname because that's the way it looks. Persian okay. rugs are expensive rugs. The Persian rug stamp is an expensive stamp.
And in my opinion, I have actually never seen a Persian rug that looks like a Persian rug stamp.
The stamp is cooler.
Sorry. The stamp is, but the bordering on the rugs and stuff that they do is always significantly different. And of course, you're never going to have a picture of George Washington. Well, maybe you would, but it would be rare.
It'd be a very interesting rug maker to have one of those. Ooh, now that could be a craft design for Etsy.com.
Yeah.
Make a Persian rug out of a Persian rug.
Oh, yeah.
That could be fun to print.
So anyway, it's a large stamp with a green border, and isn't it green?
No, it's red and blue.
Blue border?
There's a large rug and a small rug, isn't there? And one's green and red, and one's blue and red?
I thought they're both blue and red.
Uh-oh.
Grab your catalog, Cash.
Before we say something we can't take back.
You were right. It's green and red. And green, red, and white. And blue and red. Blue and red, green and red, and green and red.
Along with our first issue revenues, the revenues a lot of times say they're for specific things. Like you have inland exchange and foreign exchange.
Playing cards.
Playing cards, banknote, internal revenue, passage tickets, original process, mortgage, there's a whole bunch of them.
I think there was one for a Pope visit.
Probably.
So, Bert, you're a revenue guy. What was the original process stamp for?
I'm not really sure. Do you know, Scott, offhand?
Not positive. I think it had to do with documents that were were business related.
Well, it was for original process.
Yeah.
So secondary process
Yeah,
fun. May have had different stamps.
Involved. Thanks, Cash.
You're confusing me. Stop it.
No, passes ticket obviously would for be pass- for
right.
oh. Passes like on an ocean liner or something like right. that. It would be a transportation ticket type of document that would be taxed.
Well, yeah, they taxed based on the ticket, but they also the later documentary ones, they charged based on what type of coach you were going in.
Well, but
and all sorts of weird stuff.
The first issue revenues.
It was a rich person tax, basically.
Yeah, the first issue revenues were very specific about what kind of document they would be placed on and what they were taxing. And what happened was they found it to be too complex for the users of the stamps, and so they did away with the specific use, and they said, okay, now you can use whatever stamp on whatever document. So sometimes you'll see, like you might see a passage ticket stamp on a mortgage document or something like that, because they realized that it was too restrictive.
Yeah.
And so as long as they collected the tax on the document, it didn't matter what the stamp said. And that's what led to them then issuing just documentary tax stamps.
Well, they had it was more than that. It was you had to estimate how many express stamps you wanted and how many banknote stamps you wanted and how many original process
stamps.
Like
I said, it was too complex.
And then
you would end up buying stamps that you didn't need
exactly.
or didn't use. And they found that was inefficient and put people off of using the stamps anyway. And they found there would be more likely to follow the law and use the stamps if it was easier to use. And so they removed the restrictions on what you could use them on.
Like I collect playing cards, and I collect playing card stamps. And most of the playing card stamps seem to come off of the back of photographs.
Huh.
For some reason, photographic person was shipped a bunch of playing card stamps to put on the back of their photographs.
My guess would be that likely happened after they removed the restrictions.
Yeah, well, obviously.
And when the photographer ordered his tax stamps, that just happens to be what they shipped him.
Because I collect, I look for the certain overprints. Most of the playing card stamps had overprints for the card companies. And if it has a signature, there are some card companies that use signatures, but most of those that I've seen have come off documents that are not playing cards.
Yes.
So the errors that occurred during the printing of these stamps are some of the more affordable errors in stamp collecting, right?
Yes.
Oh, but some of them
are
way cool.
You have double transfers. You have occasional double impressions printed on both sides.
Cracked plates.
Inverted heads.
Those look kind of cool.
Those are the cool ones.
And those, I think the cheapest one's only a few hundred dollars, which makes it very affordable as an invert.
They must have been trying to get those out really quick and not really caring about quality control if there were that many of them or they're that cheap.
Now, one thing you have to watch about with those is that the vignette or the head at the middle is printed in a fugitive ink, so that when you soak them in water, that ink tends to lighten up fairly significantly. So you got to be really careful when you're either removing them from document or removing old hinges from the back of the stamp. You want to make sure that you don't leave it sitting in a bowl of water or you'll fade out the vignette.
That makes sense. I've seen that before. So now I know after the fact dried, I've gotten them from other places and the vignette is just incredibly light. So that definitely makes sense as to how that could happen.
It's probably an anti-counterfeiting measure.
Yes, absolutely.
So, these Persian rugs, are they rarer used or mint?
Well, that would be mint, I'm sure.
Yeah, mint, hard to find.
There's very, very few used ones, and I would assume even fewer mint ones, but
they're listed in the catalog only used.
Oh, wow.
However, that could be just a function of the catalog also.
Yeah, I think for those issues, they only value used.
Mm-hmm. And actually finding mint ones is kind of cool because you'll find them mint with full gum and say, these are obviously mint stamps, but there's no catalog value, and they are quite rare.
Well, I know in the American Philatelist, the article that I saw, it's what made me want to pick this for an expert topic. There were some spectacular, crazy uses on cover where they would have like a title transfer for a large corporation. And it was just slathered front, backwards, and sideways with these guys. And they had a conversion for each one showing, okay, yes, they use stamps to pay something like $6,000 or $7,000 mm-hmm. in tax. But that was because after inflation, this was documentation to prove transfer of a $60 million company.
The coolest thing I saw, and I wish I had bought it because it went for so cheap. I forget the title company. There was a title company in Southern California here that went out of business sometime in mid-90s. And the guy, they actually had bidders for hauling all the stuff away and, you know, recycling it or whatever. And the guy bid on it saying, I'm not going to recycle this. I'm going to take it and sell it to stamp collectors because it was all deeds and things like that had all the stamps on them.
Oh, my gosh.
And one of the items was from Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, the movie company.
MGM.
It was a lease. It was like a 30-page document. And the last page of the document had probably $9,000 of face value stamps on it. Now, the $9,000 in stamps actually only catalog like, I think, $100 or $150. And when it went to auction, it was at a club auction, and it sold for $100.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's like, why didn't I buy that?
That's like an exhibit piece right there. Wow.
Oh, well, even if you said, screw the exhibit, I'm going to sell it to an MGM collector. Because, you know, I don't even know whose signatures were in it.
Well, any movie collector would want that much.
Oh, yeah.
And
absolutely.
Probably be willing to pay much more for it than a stamp collector.
No kidding. But there were a lot of, I went through it, and he charged by the pound of you taking stuff. You can take whatever you wanted. He got to pick out and say, no, you can't have that, no, you can't have that, and then just charged to buy the pound. And I remember his front yard was just a hoarder area. And it was in his front yard because his backyard was filled with the storage. So his front yard, he'd just throw a tarp over it at night and the next morning pull the tarp off.
Oh, my gosh.
And it was just boxes and boxes of all this title documents. And there was no security because everything was recorded and it was all public documents. So there's no personal information, legally speaking, in there. But there was stuff. Oh, neat stuff.
Well, I guess that's your favorite revenue story.
Yeah,
anyone else
no
have
kidding.
A favorite revenue story or stamp?
No, there are a couple of forgeries out there. They're fairly well known. A couple are inexpensive, a couple are quite expensive. Something to watch out for. Also, the Persian rugs, any large stamp is going to be prone to having faults. Typically, small thins, tears, creases, things like that. Just from being a large size and the document being handled, revenue stamps tend to get beat up anyway. Manuscript cancels are generally, on these things, are generally the order of the day. It's how they were used. So manuscript cancels really don't detract unless it's really messy. A lot of ink spills and things like that. If you can find early revenue stamps with hand stamps, or even more desirable would be a printed cancellation, those generally make the stamps look nicer, cleaner, neater, and would be a bonus.
Oh, by a lot. I mean, you can have a 50-cent stamp with a nice cancel on it that, you know, will be worth $100 or $150. That's very common, actually.
Whereas a stamp with a manuscript cancel would be
50 cents. You
know. Yeah.
I also noticed that playing card stamps are traditionally folded over the edge of the packaging, and you guys don't count that as a fault because it's part of the use?
Right. It's for is well, it,
for
it
grading
exists
purposes.
For grading purposes. It exists in the stamp, and so on a certificate it would say with a horizontal crease.
As normal.
Evident, showing proper usage. So that, yeah, the crease is mentioned because it's there. It's a record of the condition of the stamp. but also the note that that is normal and proper for its proper usage. So really it doesn't detract from the grade of the stamp.
Almost,
because that's expected in the used stamp.
Almost all proprietary stamps. Proprietary meaning that you are selling a thing versus paying tax on a document. So proprietary versus documentary. Almost all proprietary stamps were put on the package or the item in a way that using the item would destroy the stamp.
The intended way to open it would destroy or damage the stamp.
Right. Like a whiskey bottle would have the stamp over the cap.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Weren't there automobile registration revenue stamps that you had to adhere to the inside of the car?
Yep, you put them on the inside window.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's no way you're going to get some of those off safely.
Yep.
Well, no, they come off with water, but the thing is, after they've been on your car for a year, a lot of them are faded.
Yeah.
So when you find used ones, they're most often, the biggest fault is that they're faded.
That's funny. No, my favorite that I got was out of an APS circuit book for $2 that was rivet canceled. It actually still has the metal rivet right smack in the middle of it. I thought that was weird.
Okay, do we have a Jenny sheet to open today?
Of course we do.
I have a good feeling. We got a good luck charm.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know. We got a really good luck charm.
Yeah, well, considering these were purchased from the Philatelic Fulfillment Center well before they started handing out the uninverted ones.
Oh,
I'm not feeling really good
about
these. No,
this is the second batch that I ordered.
Oh. So you have a shot.
I am fairly... These were purchased after they gave the three guys... free Jenny sheets. So they may have looked at me and said, wow, I really should give cash.
Yeah, because I don't know if we've heard from all three of those guys.
Yeah.
Hey, they follow us. The USPS follows us on Twitter, too.
$12 postage.
Oh.
Maybe next time. Okay, you can email us at stampshowtoday@gmail.com, Twitter at stampshowht, Facebook stampshowtoday, and our website www.stampshowtoday.com with your questions and comments. You can now leave your questions and comments on our Google Voice answering machine anytime, country code 1-949-873-4298. There's also a link to Google Voice on our website so you can make the call from your computer. And on that note, keep collecting!
Hi, I'm Kim Kellerman from Razzell Stamp Company, America's oldest stamp auction house in the country, and you are listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
Hi, this is Bobby Prager with Gary Posner Incorporated, based in Long Island, New York, and New Jersey. And I just want to say that the stamp hobby is alive and well here, and we love buying and selling stamps. We pay very, very, very good prices, so we'd rather buy 9 out of 10 collections than just a very small percentage of what we see. Also, check us out on our website at GaryPosnerInc.com. You'll see a lot of great stamps at great prices. And any questions, just feel free to call Bob at 1-800-323-4279. That's Bob Prager at 1-800-323-4279. And my cell number is 917-538-8133. Happy hunting out there.
This episode of Stamp Show Here Today is brought to you by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, the book that teaches you about repurfs, regums, color varieties, and much more. Get yours for $10 at www.philatelicsecrets.com today. Address unknown. No such number. No such zone.